on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome along to another edition of the Orient Hour. Sorry, I'm a little bit hoarse tonight. My voice is a bit weak, and Darren's in the studio with me. Good evening, Darren.
Good evening, Andy.
And hopefully, by this weird trick of technology, all the way from wherever he is today in the UK, on the end of a line, it should be Glenn Wilkie.
Evening, Andy. Evening, Darren.
Evening, Glenn. You well?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Well, let's get straight down to business, shall we? A couple of matches to talk about. Of course, a match all the way up in Cumbria at Carlisle, and a bit of a debacle, I think, is the only way to describe last night's Dogs Dinner against Harrogate. Let's start, Glenn, Carlisle, and Darren, you were there as well. What are your initial thoughts on that match?
I didn't see the game. I was away. And obviously we can't stream the Saturday kickoffs these days, so I didn't actually see the game, caught up with the highlights, but it's been well documented. Everyone said we would have taken a point before we went up there, and that's what happened. With regards to the performance, from what I'm led to believe, the first half was a bit shaky, and then second half they came out and did very well and got the goal to equalise and take a share of the spoils.
Yeah, I'd say that sums it up quite well, Glenn, really. Despite not being there, you know, we all get the papers and see everything online. I was fortunate enough to be up there, and it was a good trip. I will say that. If you haven't done it, do it. It's you know, it's got to be ticked off the list. It's the longest we do, so from that point of view, it's a great one, great memory. We were okay, I felt. The penalty, I thought, was harsh. I really do. Not a lot the guy could have done, because he couldn't really hit him from a yard. And then Drinnen worked really well. And I think we'll come on later and talk about the game. But we missed Drinnen last night, and that was clearly obvious, because he put the ball through to Smith for the goal. Smith took it ever so well. And there was some other highlights. Cedric came on, and I thought slotted in very well. So they didn't trouble us an awful lot, Carlisle. I don't really get their manager's comments about how they were deserved more out of the game. I don't think they did. I think the score was justified. And
he did actually say he thought it was a very harsh penalty, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Give him credit for that, yeah. I like the Carlisle manager. I like him. I think he's a good guy and speaks well. And, of course, straight after the game, we all know when, you know, we talk about your mate Yems at Crawley, don't we, about having a microphone shoved in their face, and I get that.
He's all right. He's a nice guy.
Yeah. I shouldn't have a subject for another show.
Oh, dear. Hey, this is my mate, Glenn. I think I worked with him about 20 years ago at the same company, and we roomed together on a management course, and it was hilarious. And he's one of the funniest guys I've ever met, honestly.
He clearly so didn't learn funny. Anything on the management course, like,
no,
did he?
No. He spent the whole time mucking about. And great fun, and you wouldn't believe it looking at those press interviews, I know, because he looks like a bulldog chewed on a wasp, doesn't he, when he's out there.
He's not good off, though, lost, bless him. No. He's our Mr. Yems. But certainly, Chris Beach spoke very well, I felt, as Kenny does, if I'm honest. I think he's very measured, considering, you know, what stress they're under after, just after a game. I felt up at Carlisle that the fans were fantastic. I have to say that. I know I was one of them, but we really got behind them. Even when we went at one goal down, we outsung the Carlisle fans, if I'm honest. And I thought that was a credit to us as well. So, all in all, it was a good Saturday out and a point, I think, equally deserved.
Now, as a point...
Can I just jump in there, right? You've just said that supporters were really, really good up at Carlisle.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're going to come on to last night's game shortly, but do you think it was good the supporters behaved well last night, booing at half-time at the full-time whistle? A section of them?
I think it's a bit early to boo, Glenn, if I'm honest. I do. I just got up and walked off, and I thought that was the appropriate response. And I'm normally one of those guys who claps defeats, if I'm honest, because I clap the effort of the players. I am with you a little bit that, Glenn. I think the expectation after three good results, really, was probably where the fans were showing it. Really, and let themselves, I'm saying let themselves down, but I think they showed their frustration, Glenn.
I mean, we'll bring ourselves on to last night then, Glenn, because that's the now. I mean, it was a satisfactory point on the weekend, but any good work, of course, undone, and an uncharacteristic early mistake from the skipper last night.
Yeah, it was a mistake from him, but I did the stream last night, and I said at half time, I said Hector Kyprianou's done him no favours whatsoever there, because he's just played a ball into him. Maybe he sees him in training and he gets out of a bit of trouble in it, and he's got that ability to do that. But last night he had a player in front of him and behind, and he had nowhere to go really, and no time and space. And obviously his first touch was good. His second touch, he sort of miskicked the ball, and then they've nicked it and gone on and scored. But I felt sorry for Prattley with receiving the ball in that tight area with players around him and just outside the box as well. It's a dangerous area, and it fair play to Harrogate. They really capitalised and went and got a goal.
I mean, that early formation, Glenn, your initial thoughts on it?
I like the way they set up. Obviously, it's been my first home game of the season last night, so I was really interested to see how they would set up after watching the squad last year set up with different players. Not too dissimilar with the two holding midfielders, but what I liked to start with was Omotoyi and Archibald. They were playing quite high up the pitch, almost like a three with Smith, and they left Kemp in that position. I thought, oh, this is good. This looks very attacking and offensive. And then I think once they scored, those two wider players dropped back almost as a three with Kemp and sometimes as a four with the other two, they were getting pushed back, and which led to problems for our defenders. When we were getting the ball, there's only one target man, and the ball was going up. When the defenders were heading it down, or Smith was flicking it on, there was no one around him. He was isolated on his own. So whether that they were instructed to do that, or they just done that naturally because they'd gone a goal behind and didn't want to concede again, it was quite interesting to see.
Glenn, I felt as well that the formation, I was with you to start with, I was thinking, yeah, I like the look of this formation, but it didn't work. And you alluded there, or you said there about the defence, but for me, the defence was playing it out far too slowly. Kenny said it himself, I think, that we were moving the ball with not enough purpose and quickly enough from the back. And also Vigoro's attempts at playing players in, which I admire. Again, I like it. But it didn't work last night, and I thought Smith and Kemp were completely too far apart. I don't think I don't recall once Smith winning any headers that Kemp was on the receiving end of, for example. Am I right? Am I wrong?
There's a couple of things in there. I would say one, Lawrence Vigouroux was a goalkeeper, and he's there to save the ball. We've been spoiled because he's kicking. I know some supporters say his kicking's poor. I think he strikes the ball very, very well, but he tries that side volley out to the wing to, he tries to rely on it because he's had some success previously with it. And I think the supporters and me as well, we expect, like you were saying about expectation levels, we're expecting him to hit a 60, 70-yard side volley into an area, which is very, very difficult, as we found last night when he's not on it. But with Kemp and Smith, I was disappointed with him, with his general play last night. I forget the penalty, but for, what was it, 6'6", 6'7", I thought he lost a lot more headers than he won, which shouldn't really be happening. When he was flicking it on, like you say, Kemp, there was no one running in behind him.
No.
So if you're going to hit a long ball there, and they were trying to hit diagonals after that, but they was hitting a long ball up to Smith, there was nobody running on behind for that flick on, anticipating it to be in a position. It may have happened once, if I can remember, but it wasn't enough. And then the other times, for Kemp wants to get the ball down facing goal. So the ball has got to go into Smith with quality to his chest or to his feet for him to set it back to Kemp so Kemp can go and do his bit of magic, you know. But that didn't happen at all last night. And I felt sorry for Kemp. And it, not that he gave up and he stopped trying. He there was a lot of times where he was in space, like 20, 30 yards of space. And like you said, Kenny Jackett said, and I said at half-time last night, they're not moving the ball quick enough because...
No.
There was lots of times where they could, if they looked, they could just play a ball into that gap where Kemp was, and they wasn't seeing him. It was too slow, too laboured. Then they were getting closed down, and then they were sort of resulting in oofing it forward. So I felt a bit sorry for Kemp, but then his body language sort of, not that he gave up, he was sort of lost in a way. He was like, I don't know whether to run there or there. I don't know where the ball's going. It looked like the team had been stuck out on the pitch for the first time together and had no pattern of play, no sort of game plan of, right, when he gets the ball, it's going to go either there or there and you can work off of it. They seemed very, very lost last night.
Well, let's just hear at that point, Glenn, let's all listen together to what Kenny had to say and also Dave's little review of the match, and then we'll come back to you straight after hearing that.
Well, Kenny, thanks for joining us. It was a tough night.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, we gave poor goals away in the first half. You know, there were soft goals against, first and foremost, when you're looking to start strong. You know, we've got caught in midfield on the first one, but still looked like we could have rectified it. And then the second one, again, we looked favourite in our own box and couldn't clear it for Armstrong's second. But generally, as a performance, though, you know, goals aside as well, we didn't do enough. We didn't compete enough, I didn't think. I thought they did a little bit of a job on us in terms of getting tight in midfield to us. We couldn't find the spare man, and then, you know, we lost our confidence. And you know, particularly in the first half, it was tough for us to play out. It was very difficult. And in terms of then, you know, the opposition, they did a job on us. We need to play a lot better than that. We need to be realistic as well with regard to the division. And on Saturday, we have to come bouncing back because in the end, we didn't get anything out of the game. Perhaps, you know, the penalty might have turned it. And obviously, the goalkeeper saved it. And, you know, our penalty taker, Aaron Drinnen, was injured tonight. But similarly, you know, we perhaps needed that pen in the second half. But I did think that Harrogate did a job on us, a little bit more manly than us, a little bit more sort of streetwise to League Two, to you know, how to get results, and just generally defended better than us as well. And you know, for us, there's lessons there, lessons we've got to learn, because, you know, we've got a good Bradford side coming here on Saturday, and we have to adjust. We have to pass that ball a lot quicker and move the ball from the back whenever we can. That's the important one. And you know, do our best to then, you know, make sure we come bouncing back, because really they did a job on us tonight, and our performance level, particularly in the first half, was low.
You mentioned Aaron Drinnen. Just how much did you miss him?
Yeah, we did, but similarly, you know, you lose players and you have to then adjust and go again, and that's the important thing. I don't think that, you know, I ever sort of criticise somebody for missing a penalty. The keeper's read it very well, and you have to go again. But similarly, you know, we didn't do enough tonight as well. You know, while there's moments we can look at, and as I said, the two goals were defendable, definitely, and we've missed a pen in the second half to get us going. Our performance level was lower than it should be as well tonight. I don't think we did enough.
How significant is Andrin's injury? Is he likely to be out for Saturday?
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, I'd be surprised if he's fit. He has an ankle injury, so, you know, we'll see. It's not too swollen, but, you know, we're not expecting him till maybe next week.
And Connor Wood came on in the second half. Is he a player that's not been fully fit at the moment?
No, that's true, but similarly, you know, I don't want to knock players in terms of, you know, when they've had knocks and putting themselves up. You know, the game's come thick and fast and your squad has to adjust.
What would you have learnt from tonight?
Yeah, there's some realism. I think Harrogate did a job on us in terms of matching us up in midfield. We couldn't find the spare man. That's the first thing. But similarly, there was a realisation today from them of how to play in League 2 and how to get results. We didn't defend well enough. We gave poor goals away. Knowing our next pass and our areas to hit weren't necessarily there. They have been there and have been strong in those areas and in those selections. But, you know, for tonight, we have to adapt and adapt quickly to a competitive division. Harrogate deserved their win tonight. You know, it hurts to say that. It really does. But similarly, you know, they did a job on us tonight. They got the two goals and then, you know, probably the penalty aside, we couldn't really get any momentum going, and you know, they could see the second half out with us without us really, you know, creating enough.
You still looking to strengthen the squad?
Yeah, maybe. You know, we haven't got many spaces left, but obviously there is, you know, around about a week left of the transfer window. We'll see. But similarly, you know, wherever we talk about players from the outside, you know, inside as well, we need to do better, definitely, internally. Yeah.
What about the other injuries, the likes of Paul Smith and, of course, Adam Thompson?
Yeah, they certainly won't be this way. You know, Paul Smith will be at least a month, really, with a hamstring injury, unfortunately, and we'll see how he progresses. But, you know, I'm not expecting either of those back too soon at the moment. Yeah.
Any other injuries tonight other than wounded Plaid?
I hope not. You know, we do, you know, want to be sort of lacking in players. But similarly, you know, whoever we put out on Saturday, and that's the important thing. You know, we have to be better than that. You know, we have to move the ball better than that. We have to defend better than that. Really, in the end, though, we have to compete better than that. Because Harrogate, at long spells of the game there, outcompeted us as well, which is disappointing.
And finally, about the supporters, they never gave up, did they?
No, they didn't, and we've been good, and we've been good here, and that was, you know, by far, you know, our worst, really, in terms of 90 minutes, and you know, we didn't really give them enough to shout about tonight, and that was disappointing from ourselves. But similarly, you know, the next game comes very, very quickly, and Saturday's an opportunity, and it's an opportunity we have to take.
Thank you, Kenny. Good
My
luck.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
In a tough few days for the O's, the first half at Carlisle, late Noint, exposed in defence and struggled to present any sort of threat. The penalty was harsh, but there is no doubt that the home side deserved their half-time advantage. Kenny Jackett acted, his double change had a real impact. Oggy, strong at the back. Harry Smith, a real presence in attack. Aaron Drinnen setting up the opportunity, which Smith coolly accepted. So the hopes were high of the faithful as we turned to Brisbane Road on Tuesday night for the visit of Harrogate. But Simon Reaver had clearly done his homework. The extra midfielder denied the O's the opportunity to demonstrate the jacket ball that had been so effective against Exeter City. Lapses at the back were punished in the first half, and of course, early in the second, yet another penalty miss. Aaron Drinnen has been outstanding in the opening few matches. His work weight exceptional. He was a notable absentee on Tuesday. He could be again on Saturday when Bradford City will provide a real test of Orient's character and resolve.
Well, thank you, Dave. And Glenn, you got the gist of that, and quite a measured response from Kenny Jackett.
Yeah, he didn't sound too happy. He sounded as if he wanted to get out of that interview pretty quickly, which is completely understandable following the performance and the result. But yeah, everyone who was at the game saw what went on. He's not hid behind any excuses or anything like that. Completely honest, and said they wasn't good enough. They wasn't good enough, and they didn't move the ball quick enough, like he said. It was almost like men against boys. They got muscled out of it all across the pitch. And the most frustrating thing for any manager is you don't want your team to be outrun by the other team with effort, and that's what happened last night.
Bit of a bock team, aren't they, Darren, this Harrogate?
Do you know what? I had the pleasure of meeting their manager briefly the last time we played them, or the home season in the National League, sorry. And I really like a guy, another guy that I really rate. And I think if you look at the squad changes they made, Glenn, they let 13 players go and they signed 12. Very, very similar to the Orient in that respect. And I felt there were times last night, and again, I don't want to sort of dig individuals out too much, but I thought that there was times, just not just with Smith, for example, and Kemp looking like they hadn't played together, because to be fair, they hadn't. But I didn't see that last night in Harrogate cutting to the chase. Again, am I wrong, Glenn, or did you feel that they there was a lot of head tennis at one point in the second half? Do you remember, Glenn? It was pinging around.
Yeah, the crowd were cheering. Yeah.
Yes, and it looked like two teams that were sort of struggling to find their way in the game a little bit at that point. But yeah, you get that like in League Two. But I felt that they had a better understanding of us as a team.
They looked more disciplined. They looked like they had a game plan. And as soon as you go up one or two early in the game, away from home, you haven't got to do much else apart from defend. And last night, they defended very, very well. Kenny Jackett spoke about our extra player in midfield. I'm guessing he's talking about Kemp. They just went almost like man for man. It wasn't, we didn't have an extra player. There wasn't anybody sent off. They almost went man for man and just said, come on then, what have you got? Are you going to break us down? Have you got anything special? Because it's going to take something special to break us down. But they just, like Kenny Jackett said, they ran hard, they tackled strong, they were gritty, they played the game very well, you know, like sort of going down and taking their time and water breaks and all sorts, just trying to kill the game and disrupt any kind of momentum we were going to try and get. And they did it very, very well. I don't know the players they did bring in and what level they've played at, but they seemed very experienced, and they had a lot of Football League experience just to get that plan, get in front and just kill the game. And that's what they did.
Well, I also thought, you know, you talk about their work rate. I remember in the 89th minute, they were still very, very determined not to lose the ball, to give too much away. You're right what you're saying. Once they're 2-0 up, of course they've got more to play for and something to hold on to. But I also felt that a few of our heads went down a little bit, if I'm honest, after the second goal. I really always, as a fan, get disappointed in my team when another team outworks us. Some of their physical side as well, I noticed that they had very, very diminutive players, I noticed, but they were real ripped guys, you know, and I think physically we lost the battle last night. Again, Kenny said that. And that's disappointing, Glenn, if I'm honest. As a fan, I'm disappointed when we get our fault.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, 100%. It's the number one thing as a coach or a manager you look for. You want your effort and your attitude to be right, and that is by competing and going up. And if there's a 50-50 tackle, you expect your player to come out on top, or you'd want him to be. But they were winning balls which were 50-50 easily, you know. And there was players not backing out of tackles, but they wasn't going in fully, and it just there was something missing last night. And I was assured before the game, I was speaking to people at the ground and saying, look, I've not seen any of the games yet, what's this team like, what's the squad like? And I'd say about three people before the game said, forget the results, what's happened, we're unbeaten, we should be a top three team. With the performance we've seen so far this season, we are looking like a top three team. So I my expectation level for, I'm really intrigued to see what they're like. And then when I saw what the team were like last night, I thought the two centre-halves last night, not so much Happy, but Beckles, I'd heard rave reviews about him from the first three games or four games. I looked at him last night, and some of the stuff he was doing and where he was getting caught and stuff, I didn't know if he had a slight injury, because he didn't seem to run freely. And then once Harrogate got in front, they were hitting the ball over the top for Armstrong, and what a player he is, by the way, he's got bundles of pace. They're hitting the ball over the top, and Beckles and Happy, they're not super quick. So he was getting to the ball first every time and relieving a bit of pressure for them. But yeah, I thought our two centre halves struggled a lot last night.
No, they did, and I've seen all four games, and that is by far our worst performance by a country mile. And you talk about Beckles, he was bullied by Armstrong. Armstrong had it in his pocket, in my opinion. And that was Beckles' worst game. But in fairness to Beckles, it was everybody's worst game, Glenn. And, you know, we haven't put a shift in like that. We've had a few...
It was a communal nightmare, that's what
it was.
Used to call them,
it was,
yeah.
It was. There was no man of the match last night. That, you know, but we've had a few sort of misfiring halves, Salford being one that springs to mind. And you could say Carlisle in the first half. I personally... Mm. You know, I would say that that's probably fair enough. But yeah, Carlisle, second half, Salford, first half, then certainly QPR after the first half hour. The next hour, we were the better team. And Exeter, we were never in trouble. And by far the better team throughout. It was a 90-minute performance. So there's a team there. I said on my social last night that is it one win in four or is it one defeat in four? Because we are only four games into a season, and let's not start writing the house off.
Well, no one's you know absolutely slaughtering us, are we? And at the same time, we're not putting anyone to bed either. So it's work to do. And one thing I'd like to just cover quickly with Glenn before we bail you out and hear from Dean Cox, Glenn, penalties. You know, you got to say the standard was shocking, wasn't it?
Well, the actual penalty miss.
Yeah,
I had a. Like I said earlier, I was doing the stream last night with Oliver Buck and, I've forgotten his name and I was going to apologise to him. I'll get it in the neck from him, the guy who works on another podcast. He sort of read up afterwards and said how disgusting it was that the referee took his time and went over and booked their manager or assistant manager and slowed the game down, and it was a big wait for Smith before he took his penalty, which it was. It was 5-6 minutes, it seemed like, even though there was only 3 or 4 minutes added on at the end of the game. But there was pressure on Smith, and he did have to stand there for a while and wait. However, he's taken the penalty. He's hit the target, which minimum requirement. Okay, did he connect with it hard enough? No. Keeper saved it. I thought he telegraphed his penalty from his body position before he even ran up. It was, I could see which way he was going to hit it, let alone a professional goalkeeper.
It was on the floor, stuff, Glenn, you know? And it wasn't too far away from the keeper, was it? It wasn't far enough away to make a real effort, and it was too low down.
Would you rather that, or would you rather it go 20 foot wide?
I'd rather see him blast it in the top corner, actually, mate, to be honest.
No, exactly. But listen... What if he hit in the top corner and the goalkeeper dives up and he saves it? It still goes down as a penalty miss. It doesn't matter. It's a miss is a miss. Mm. He's missed the penalty, unfortunately. All right, it's his first. Is it his first start, I'm led to believe, in the season? All right, he scored Saturday, so confidence should have been high. But what I will say to back him up a bit last night, he was up there on his own and he did work hard. He was a battering man. He literally got battered. Everything was going high to him, so he was competing all the time. And there is a lot of energy taken out of you, especially when you've not played all the games 90 minutes. So his fitness levels may not have been as sharp as they should have been, and he could have been tired. My only gripe with the penalty was I thought somebody else would have taken it, because I set up in the gallery, I said, is Kemp going to take this? And they said, no, Smith. So I've not seen Archibald, but a few people said Smith took the ball off Archibald. So that, listen, he's in the target, the keeper saved it. If the keeper dives the other way, it goes in, regardless of how well he struck it. So
my understanding, Archibald was on penalties and Smith took it off him. And these things happen in football. And as you said, the guy, you know, he hit the target. I don't think we should be too tough on anyone for missing a penalty, personally, Andy. You know, I think that if you look at some of the best players in the world, they miss penalties. You know, I mean, that said, I think I saw a statistic today that was absolutely awful. Our penalty, I think we're something like approaching 467 days since we last scored a penalty, you know, in a game. So we have got a problem there.
We need to bring back a player that we'll be speaking to later, Matt Lockwood.
We've got a fella coming on in a minute who knows a thing or two about penalties, haven't we? So
Dean Cox, yeah.
Well, Dean and
Matt.
Matt, yeah. So, and now we've got Uteri out on the panel.
we've got the lot, haven't we?
Penalty takers. Just need Halsey now. Anyway, listen, lovely to speak to you, Glenn, and we'll catch up soon, mate. You take care.
Take care, Glenn.
No problem. All the best, guys. See ya.
Cheers, bye. Glenn. Well, before we get Christian on the line from España, I believe, let's hear from the latest member of the Hall of Fame, along with Matt Lockwood and Joby McEnough. It's Dean Cox, who we spoke to earlier. Well, Dean, first of all, congratulations on becoming another member of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, I was over the moon when I saw it announced. Yeah, really nice. Really nice touch.
So when did you hear first? I mean, did the club approach you, or did you hear when everybody else heard?
No, I've got to be honest. I saw it online. Someone tweeted me, and I thought I was training at the time, so I didn't catch it. But, someone tweeted me, and I wasn't too sure. And then, to be fair, I was then contacted by the club later after that tweet. They must have seen, and, I was then told that I was going to be in it, yeah, so...
That's good stuff. I mean, what do you think it is that people saw in you as opposed to other people around you at the time that to nominate you?
I'd like to think it was my hard-working, honest, wear my heart on my sleeve sort of performances, I think. And I think because I was there a long time and, I'm still fondly of them, but, I look out for all their results and, I'll try and get down as much as I can, and still got many friends down there with Ada and sort of people like that still behind the scenes. Obviously the playing staff has changed a bit and the management team, but great fond memories down there, and I'd like to think it's a combination of all those things, really.
Well, if you had to pick a favourite moment, I mean, you had quite a few highs and a few lows, obviously, in your time at the Orient. I think we've covered most of it, but if you had to pick a moment in time, that's was your moment, if you like, at Lake Norham, what would that be?
It would probably be rather than one game or specific moment, I'd say probably the season that we just fell short of getting promoted. I think that season was a bit of dreamland, really. We were winning games with ease at times, and I was lucky enough to be playing in such a fantastic team that we did so well, and obviously just fell so close and fell short of the last hurdle, obviously, in the playoff final.
Dean, congratulations, first of all. If I could ask one question and one question only, if you had to pick and nominate one person yourself from your time at the O's to go in that Hall of Fame with you, putting you on the spot, I know, but what's your answer?
I think I would go with Kevin Lisby.
I thought you'd say that. Great choice.
I'd go with Kev. Yeah, I think crucial goals, crucial times, his influence on the younger players, especially me at the time. He was more than just a player. He sort of got us functioning in the dressing room. Did a lot off the pitch as well as on it. So, I'd definitely say Kevin.
And just in closing, you're settling in okay at your new club?
Yeah, everything's fine. Everything's all good, yeah. I'm just currently I'm enrolled on my UAQB course now, so I'm stepping foot on the other side, so looking to get that badge hopefully by next summer. And I'm playing, but I'm coaching the youth team here and doing little bits that hopefully with Brighton Hove Albion, some community bits and maybe some academy training, coaching. So, yeah, one foot still playing, but the other foot sort of looking to the future.
Yeah, you're looking at got an eye on the future. Well, well done on getting in on the Hall of Fame, Dean. I'm sure we'll see you soon.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks very much.
Thanks, mate. There you go. That was Dean Cox when we spoke to him earlier. And hopefully, by the magic of these buttons here, we've got Christian Wheeler on the end of the line.
Evening, gents. You all right?
Yeah, very good. Very good, Christian. You're still in Spain, are you?
Still longing it out, yeah. Hopefully come home at the weekend, maybe. But while the sun's still shining, I might as well make the most of it.
If you're out there much longer, Christian, there's rumours you're going to become a tax exile.
I'd like to stay here, but I don't think the wife will have a bar of it. But we shall see.
It's been terrible
to hear
here.
Dean's final words.
I mean, just touching on that, obviously we've got Matt Lockwood coming up about 15 minutes' time, so we'll keep your discussion a little bit brief inside 15 minutes. But Matt, Dean and Joby McEnough, the latest people to go into the Hall of Fame, your thoughts on those?
I think most people would say that Matlock was the best left-back that we had. Dean Cox the same. I think, you know, Joby's, I've said it a number of times, Joby McEnough has been one of my favourite players of the last, 20 years. And I think he's been a good role model for the club on and off the pitch. Obviously, the management bit didn't work, and I'm glad that didn't really tarnish his playing career. But, yeah, I think they all deserve it. I think there'll be, hopefully, a couple more along the way. Obviously, in our discussion group today, people like John Mackey and a few others have got a strong shout for getting in. But I think definitely those three players brought a lot of joy to most Orient fans.
Yeah, I mean, the one that did make me laugh in the comments on our WhatsApp group, and it was a fair point, actually. They said, well, somebody said, well, John Mackey was a promotion-winning captain. And someone said, well, so was Joby McEnough. And then somebody said, well, so was John Sitton. So do we put Sitton in there?
I personally...
as a promotion-winning captain.
I think the one that from that era that should go in is Kevin Howes. Played for the club for 10 years, great servant to the club in that respect. Not many people do that these days. And somebody I remember fondly as a really good player.
Yeah, how was he? He was more than that, he's a decent guy.
Yeah, very decent.
Very,
yeah, exactly.
Very nice man.
Another very good reason to put someone in as well. What are you saying about John Sitton?
The only thing I'd say about John Sitton is everyone that I've spoke to in and around the game from a youth team perspective has always had lots of fond words to say about him. And I think, obviously, his reputation was tarnished, obviously, by the programme. But, I can't. Yeah, I'm a bit... that's probably not one for me to say a yes for, but...
No, it's just a point, when people said that, oh, well, let's put promotion-winning captains in, you thought, well, actually, he was one, and there's not been many of them, when you think about it, but there you go. Anyway, Chris, you watched, we're just going back a little bit, because back to the weekend, you watched the Carlisle game, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I think probably we were glad to take a point. I think first half we were way, way short of the mark. I think they really run over the top of us. And I think we'll probably take a point. Obviously on our WhatsApp group, I was a little bit frustrated that when we got to 1-0, we didn't go for it. I know that Kenny Jackett explained that Drinham was carrying a knock and we effectively played with 10 men. But I was a little bit disappointed that at 1-0, they looked out on their feet. If you noticed after the goal, a lot of their players dropped to the floor. Couple of players went down for lengthy injury knocks, and I just think at 1-0, Smith had come on and made a massive difference. I think he won every ball there was, but pretty similar to Tuesday night, we was miles away from him. You can't play, for me, I don't think you can play a big man like that in a three, and the reason being is the way we're playing at the moment, you just haven't got runners off him. So at the minute, he's heading it down or helping it on, and people are miles away from him. And that was the case on Saturday. We got to 1-1. They retreated 10 yards. They looked out on their feet. And, Drinham going off or not, it looked like we kind of, not give up, but we were happy to take that point. And I think Darren said on Saturday, coming back on the train, I think if you'd have probably offered it as the point before the game, we probably would have taken it. But first half, we got out of jail. They could have been out of, I think for me, I've read some things on Twitter saying they didn't really have great chances, but they must have had 90% of the ball. They run over the top of us. Vigouroux made a great save at the near post from the header. So, for me, I probably points a fair result, although I felt frustrated by it.
Christian, one thing you don't see on telly that you do see live, on Saturday in the first half, we had good shape. And going back to the Carlisle first half, they didn't pepper us with shots. They didn't work our keeper nowhere near enough. What they had against us was good possession against us, and they had the ball more than us. But our shape was very good on Saturday. And at half time, yes, we deservedly went one goal down and went in at half time 1-0 down. But we definitely deserve something out of the game, in my opinion. You know, having been there, having seen it, I felt that it wouldn't have been a travesty if we'd have come away with nothing, but we were worthy of it. And I think the score, often is the case in football, the end score is the right one, because that's the end score. And then we move on to sort of Tuesday, full of hope, because we've had a couple of decent performances away. We then go on to the situation with a Tuesday night home game, a game we've got not in hand because it's too early, but it's a game that we can lift ourselves into third if we get a win. I think we all turned up full of reasonable confidence and hope, because we're Orient fans and we know not to get overconfident because it's not the Orient way. But one of the things we've spoke about on our group chat is, and you've said it, and I think we've all said it, and is that the squad big enough? Is the squad strong enough? Because it didn't look like it was last night to me. What's your thoughts on that?
No, I don't think it is. I agree with you. As I say, I felt more frustrated by Saturday, because first off, I felt like we got out of jail a little bit, and then we got back to 1-1, and I felt they were there for the taking, and I think we could have sneaked it 2-1, and it would have been smash and grab, but we were much better second half, and I think Smith had a positive effect on that. The squad does look paper thin, and I think in the shows that we had prior to the season kicking off, we all said that the squad, or the first 11, I think looks quite good. I'm quite happy with it, the first 11. The problem would be if we had some injuries, and now, for whatever reason, Thompson is not back yet. Obviously, Smith's injured, Drinnen's injured. It's starting to look a little bit, thin and a little bit lacking experience. And, I think they just, I made the joke today that Kenny Jackett said 30 times in his interview, but they've done a job on us. And I think a lot of Division 2 football is about that. Can you outwork your opponent? Can you do the right things in the right areas? Can you do the one percenters? And I think on Tuesday night, probably 8 or 9 players didn't turn up. It is a worry for me that our best player probably of last year, Dan Kemp, for me in the last two, I made a point of it today, the last two games has been very, very anonymous.
He's not started the season well.
No, I think Saturday, as I say, they run over the top of us. And not in a derogatory way, but they were quite mocking towards... The Carlisle commentary was quite mocking towards how he played, and he looked like a kid fish out of water, should go back to the under-23s, and that to me how it looked. It looked like they just run over the top of him, and for me probably Carlisle away somewhere where you'd play Craig Clay. And Tuesday night he was pretty absent again, and I'm not so sure in the blood and thunder games in Division 2 that you're going to get the best out of Dan Kemp playing him in a three in the field. To me, I don't know how you work it out, but if you're going to play Smith up front, you're best off playing someone alongside Smith and then playing Archibald and maybe Kemp wide, because at the minute we've got a real problem down the right-hand side. Smith's got injured. The new boy looks a fish out of water there. I like Ruel, but he's a centre-forward. He's not a right winger. So we haven't really got anyone at the minute that can play wide right. So for me, will he change the formation on Saturday and go back to 4-4-2, play Archibald wide left, maybe Prattley in the middle with Hector in the minute, and does Kemp play wide right and cut in and shoot, and Archibald go around the outside and get crosses in? But we need a couple, because as I say, you look at the squad at the minute and there's not really anyone on that bench you think like he can, rule apart. Is there anyone on that bench that can come on and change the game? Anyone on that bench with any experience?
And Craig Clay's a holding mid, and when you're 2-0 down, the last thing you need to put on with half an hour to go is a holding mid, unless one's injured, that is. But also as well, I can't give too much away, but the club are trying to bring players in. We know that.
okay, yep. They've said that, and it's evident now that we've gone into the season, we're four games in, we've picked up two, I think, key injuries, Drinnen and Smith. Thompson, yep. We don't know, like you say, when he's coming back, and we've lost a game because of it. I really don't believe we'd had that first 11 out last night, including Drinnen in that team, with that result that we got last night would have been the case. I actually think we'd have got something out of that game with Drinnen in the team.
Bradford are going to muscle you in off this as well. They're going to come in with all guns blazing, aren't they?
Well, interestingly, Andy, Christian, I'm hearing Lee Angell's out. So, not that Angell's a physical player, but he's a technical player, isn't he? But yeah, I agree with you, Andy. I think Bradford are going to see that last night. They're going to watch that game. Yeah. Of course they are. They're going to analyse that.
Well, they're going to think it's a powder puff.
And they're going to look. And again, and Christian's going to have a wry smile when I say this. I don't think Hector was strong enough last night.
It's frustrating. I mean, I don't know about Chris, but to watch people getting muscled off a ball or pushed up a ball, you think, for God's sakes, man up, get out there and give them a bit back, And if you get beat, you get beat, but you do not get beat by being muscled off the ball.
It's one thing I'll give Kemp credit for. For a guy of his stature, he will put a tackle in. He's not frightened to tackle. Whereas Hector's a bigger lad. And for me, as well as playing, and I definitely think he played the wrong ball to Prattley. I definitely agree that
he sold it.
But I also think that I can only remember so far in four games one killer pass for the goal against Exeter, the third goal. I don't think that we're getting enough out of Hector at the moment. Now, I know he's young. I accept that. I accept that he's learning his trade. But for me, he's somebody that's got to step up. Kemp's got to step up. Mm-hmm. And they might be young, but they're in the team.
Well, he's given them a chance, Christian, isn't he? He's given them the opportunity to grab that opportunity. If they don't grab it, they'll be out, and they'll be dropped. Well,
he showed that with Rule. Christian.
I agree. I'm probably Hector's biggest fan. I thought he was, I said so much. I thought he was poor on Saturday. I thought he was poor last night. The ball inside at that point of the game was poor. I also think that Prattley's more experienced enough than, to know what's around him, and if he's getting that ball after a couple of minutes, he could turn that down the line and just get it up the pitch. But he has been poor, and to my point, a month or so ago, he will be one of those that there's going to be times when Kenny will have to say, you're not doing it. You've got to come out, and for your better development, you need to go away and work on X, Y, Z. And when you improve those, you'll come back into the team. And I'm not Craig Clay's biggest fan, but I would say that he gets around the pitch and he gives 100%. I'm not so sure that playing Prattley and Hector at the minute in a free where Kemp's being a little bit overridden, I'm not so sure that it's working. I'm not so sure it's dynamic enough.
Okay.
For me.
Christian, we're going to have to cut it short in a moment because we've got Matt Lockwood ringing in a couple of minutes. But just touching on a brief thing, we will say congratulations to Mr. Smith on his wedding, but a wedding during the football season. Your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think you don't know. I think I was very strongly against it in our WhatsApp group. I think there's two reasons that I'm strongly against it, other than making us look a bit silly. One is I've never known anyone as a full-time contracted player, not full-time, but a contracted player, whether that be Ryman League, Conference South, Conference, in the Football League, to ever get married in August. As I say, for me, that's a two-week fine for even asking, let alone having a wedding. And two, some people don't realise, when you're injured, you're in a football club more than when you're playing. You don't get your day off. You're doing your rehab at the weekend. You're with the physio as much as you can, and bottom line is we're missing him. You could see from the last two games we're crying out for a wide right player. And anyone saying to me, it doesn't matter, he's injured anyway, we need him back now. We need him back sooner rather than later. And no one can tell me at the videos that I've seen of him on his wedding jumping up and down, there's no way that getting married and having 30 Jager bombs and enjoy yourself for the night, he's doing his hamstring or his groin any good at all. And, for anyone to say he's out for a month and see them videos, as I say, his agent's either Houdini, if that was agreed before, or, we're having the wall pulled over our eyes. I just think, it's not a good look, is it? I just, for me as well, he's got 25 mates nearly at Scotland, trying to graft to get to get 3 points. I just don't think it's a good look for the football club, full stop, as I say.
Fair enough, not, mate. Fair enough. If I just say, I know.
Yeah.
And I mean, we'll wish him all the best, but it is a strange one, we will say, and I'm sure the club will come out on his back on his behalf, but it is a strange decision. But Christian, I've got to bail you out because Matt Lockwood's waiting to come in on this, so thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you soon, mate.
No problem, gents.
Take care.
Have a lovely evening. Take care.
All the best.
There you go. There's Christian putting the cat amongst the pigeons.
He didn't hold back, what did he? He didn't hold back. Well, he should have got Billy Herring on because Billy was
Billy was very
view,
defensive.
Wasn't he? Yeah, and I was sitting on the fence actually, wasn't I?
Billy was of the view that the lad's out injured, and
he's had to cancel
his wedding in a couple of times, and he said, "Why not?" He said, "Yeah, he's off anyway."
Took both points of view on board, and on balance.
I don't think putting it out on social media. I know it's his wedding, but I mean, a little bit of decorum, but a little bit of thought, and not put it.
Well, they're still young men,
I know they are, and I think maybe.
I've had a father, a boy putting stuff out on media, so I know what it's like.
I know, we're old farts, aren't we? I won't mention old farts, but I've got Matt Lockwood on the phone. How are you, Matt?
Good evening, how are you?
Hello, mate, how are you?
I'm very well.
Good man, and congratulations in order, sir. We spoke to Dean Cox earlier, one of the other recipients, and congratulations on entering the Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. No, it was an honour to be nominated and to get in there.
Matt, I put Dino on the spot earlier. It's Darren. Hi, Matt. Good to talk to you again. I put Dino on the spot and I asked him this question. I'm going to ask you the same question. If you could nominate one player from your playing time with the O's, who you played alongside, to go in that Hall of Fame with you, who would it be, Matt?
I mean, for me, I think it's got to be Lingy. Because, you know, he served the club through so many different roles. You know, he obviously was a great player back in the day. Then he obviously came back in a coaching capacity and then became the manager. Led us to, promotion, and everyone remembers the day at Oxford and stuff. You know, and Lingy was the mastermind behind that, obviously with Smudge and everything else. And then he's gone and now running things from behind the scenes as director of football. So for me, you know, he would be up there, definitely.
I mean, to be fair to him, I agree in a way, because, you know, that first automatic promotion for 36 years shouldn't be overlooked, should it?
Of course not. And the team he assembled was really talented. I mean, you know, he didn't go for big physical players. He went for technically gifted lads. I mean, you know, you only have to look at the midfield when you've got, you know, Joe Keith, Michael Simpson, Craig Easton and Shane Tudor across the midfield. You know, the tallest one was Eastie at sort of probably 5'10". The others were all very, you know, skillful, talented like players, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just a team full of pace and power. It was, you know, a really good sort of technical team that Lingy assembled, and you could see his personality was all over that, because that's how he played. When he was as a player, he was a very skillful, gifted, flair player, wasn't he? And that's how he wanted his teams to play. And that's what, you know, at the end of the day, he signed all those players and allowed them to express themselves. You know, he never sort of said to us in training, right, you know, when you get into this area, just do this or just do that. He trusted us. And that's a skill in itself, you know. And I think the team that he put together, along with Smudge, was excellent. And it was definitely my favourite time at Orient.
Yeah, I've been going up for a long, long time, obviously, and watching and commentating on the O's. And I would say that season, Matt, I saw the ball on the floor more often than any other season, because the team passed the ball.
Of course they did. I think, you know, you had, like with myself and Justin Miller at fullbacks, you know, you had two ball-playing fullbacks. At centre-half, you had two sort of, you know, defenders, didn't you? I mean, Gabby and John, they would openly admit they're not, sort of going to spray the ball 40-yard diagonal passes to wingers and stuff like that. They were there to defend, and they loved defending, and you needed that. In the team we had, you needed guys like that, and we just all complemented each other. I mean, you know, up front, you had Gary Alexander and Lee Steele. You know, they didn't mind putting themselves about a bit and making it difficult for defenders. But that wasn't a fluke. That team didn't just, fall into Lingy's lap. He identified the sort of players he wanted and the sort of personalities that he needed in that dressing room. Because when you actually went through the team that he put together, it was a team full of leaders. You know, myself, John Mackey, Gary Alexander, Lee Steele, you know, Craig Easton, Mark Simpson, we all, everyone. You know, there wasn't a player out there that was shy, you know, that was shy to voice their opinions. You know, the dressing room sort of ran itself.
Yeah.
You know, Martin didn't need to really do anything on a day-to-day basis. He knew that we ran a tight ship. He knew that there was no chance that any of the young lads could be unprofessional because we had an experienced team, and we demanded that those young lads, like, you know, like Sajabo, when they were coming through, we demanded that their their levels of professionalism were the same as ours, and that's why we were so successful. And,
I mean,
and like I said, yeah, that's why I would have sort of voted for Martin.
Yeah, I mean, you yourself, I see as, you know, the first of the sort of modern generation of fullback that we see now that gets forward, more like wingbacks, etc. But you were sort of the first wave of that, I think, that we saw at the club, a player, you know, a defender who got forward and caused damage at the other end. I mean, what trait do you think the fans saw in you to elect you into this Hall of Fame?
I would like to think, you know, loyalty was up there. Obviously, ability, you know, commitment. I mean, obviously, the fact that I scored sort of quite a few goals. I just think, you know, the way I played, I never sort of panicked. I always thought, you know, that I was always quite composed on the ball and looked for a pass, did the simple things well. Obviously, my range of passing was fairly good, and my vision was always quite good. So I suppose, maybe because I was slightly different to the stereotypical, you know, League One, League Two fullback, maybe that made me stand out a little bit more, that I wasn't just, you know, head down, boot it anywhere, love a tackle, have a long throw. You know, I was a more cultured fullback. And I think maybe that was probably down to the fact that when I was growing up, I didn't play defender in defence. You know, I was a sort of a creative midfielder, and then I sort of got pushed out to fullback once I got to, you know, 19, 20. So maybe that was the reason. I was sort of an attacking fullback before it became fashionable.
Well, it's certainly a good, a well-deserved placement into that Hall of Fame, Matt. And I thank you for joining us briefly tonight. We've got to say good night to you. I'm afraid time is beating us, but congratulations, and I hope we'll see you at the O's before too long.
Yep, no, thank you very much for having me on. It was, an honour to be nominated.
Thanks, mate. Take care, Matt. Bye now.
Cheers, guys.
Well, there you go. We come to the end of the show. We've been beaten by the clock. Darren, thanks for getting here.
My pleasure.
We won't mention the fact that Barry Galvin forgot you're supposed to be here, will we?
We will. No, oh, we will. Well, just well mentioned.
Yeah. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next week. Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's the wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground, you can get your kids in just £5, get an Orienteer, it's only a quid, get a cup of tea. This ain't up to par. Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an FA Cup 78. We had John Sitter, he's most irate. We were club reviver, but we don't care. Checker Shirtley and Chris Tate's hair. I remember the moment that Lee Steele scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure, I remember the pain, and I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. This ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again.
Road, it ain't